Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
New York's Republican Party met in a hotel outside Albany this week to choose its new chair. Buffalo area's Nick Langworthy replaces Ed Cox, the son-in-law of former President Nixon. And the 38-year-old GOP chair promises to bring new energy to the fight against the state's dominant political party, the Democrats. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The meeting, attended by Republicans from all over the state, was part nominating session, part pep rally.
We are here today to say our comeback starts now.
Outgoing longtime GOP chair Ed Cox acknowledges that the party needs to re-energize in New York.
We are ready, we are energized, and we are united. We have done it before, and we will do it again.
Cox lost his bid to remain as party chair. Speakers were uniformly complimentary toward the now former chair, but they also spoke of a need for change. And they say they see an opportunity in winning voters who may be put off by the leftward trend of the Democratic Party, with key figures like New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Central New York Representative Tom Reed urged Republicans to go outside their comfort zone and visit places like Harlem and liberal upstate cities like Ithaca, where he says they could win some converts.
This party has been taken over by extremists. This party stands for ideas that if we don't stand up, will destroy not only our state, but our country. And when we hand her off to our sons and our daughters, I know you will join me as we join Nick Langworthy to say never on our watch. America will not become a socialist nation.
Others say Governor Andrew Cuomo and the all-Democratic state legislature have gone too far in the progressive policies this year and offended many potential voters, including allowing undocumented immigrants to obtain driver's licenses and strengthening rights for late-term abortions. Democrats in the final hours of the legislative session nearly passed an automatic voter registration bill. It mistakenly would have allowed undocumented immigrants to vote. The glitch was discovered by Assemblywoman Nicole Malliotakis. She's a Staten Island Republican who spoke at the convention and who was seeking a seat in Congress.
That was no error. They know how reckless they have been under one-party rule. They know what they've done, and they know that they pissed off New Yorkers this year.
Langworthy, the former Erie County chair, has overseen an upstate Republican bastion against the growing statewide influence of the Democrats. He's an avid supporter of President Donald Trump, and he says Republicans should learn from the president that it's okay to play hardball in politics.
Our president has made America great, and the NYGOP will help him keep America great.
Speaking to reporters afterward, Langworthy says that he believes voters can be won over with an economic message. And he says the president is delivering economic results for everyone, comparing the situation to that of conservative President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s.
Most Americans can say, I'm better off than I was 3 years ago. And I believe that President Trump will help boost, especially bringing voters out that may have stayed home in the 2018 elections that were really tough on New York Republicans.
Langworthy vows to field a Republican candidate in every congressional district in the state next year. After that, he says he plans to find someone to run and win against Governor Andrew Cuomo and deny Cuomo's wish to serve a fourth term. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartalk. Well, Alan, we just heard from our Karen DeWitt about the election, the official election of Nick Langworthy this week. He's the head, the new head of the Republican Party in New York. He takes over for Ed Cox, of course, someone you talk to regularly for your Capital Connection program. He's vowing to get seats in every county in the state.
Well, let's put it this way. The Republicans are doing very badly in New York State. It is a blue state. Now that the Republicans have lost the state Senate, it's going to be harder and harder for them to do what Langworthy is saying. Look, Trump is extremely unpopular in this state. But what do? They go and get rid of a guy who has been pro-Trump. There's no question about it. Nixon's son-in-law, Ed Cox. He was a Trumper, but not to their liking. So they get rid of him, and they bring in a guy who is even more pro-Trump, and they elect him. And he says, I'm going to do it. Well, look, you can't argue with the fact that Cox got thrown out because the party was not doing well. But as the Democrats take the Senate and will have a shot, if they don't blow it, at redistricting in this state and taking away some of the awful gerrymander that had always existed. Now, I'm not going to pretend that in the Assembly, the lower house, the so-called lower house, that they don't do the same thing. But there are just so many more Democrats in New York. In the case of the Republicans in the Senate, what they did was to say, okay, the only way we're going to stay in power is to, with a fine, fine microscope and everything else, do a gerrymander where we can't lose, and yet they did lose. And that ain't going to change because you got a new chairman.
She made a remark. That's Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, a Republican, at the election event for Nick Langworthy this week. Took a shot at Kirsten Gillibrand, New York Senator, basically calling her a chameleon, a political chameleon, someone who went from Annie Oakley on the right to much more liberal these days.
Well, politics as usual, but I got to say, you know, we have tried very hard to bring that very congresswoman on, Republican congresswoman, onto WAMC, and she has shown up, but very, very rarely. You don't want to answer questions, but when you get a chance to take a shot, you take a shot. That's what politics is all about. She's pretty comfortable in that seat, and it looks like, you know, she'll continue to hold it. And she'll please some of the partisans that, you know, just hate Gillibrand. That's the way they play the game. You know, David, Kirsten Gillibrand was basically appointed by a governor and then won subsequently herself and then won her office again. She decided that she was going to run for president of the United States. Everybody's allowed to do that. And in fact, almost everybody is. Little joke there. But the fact is that she can't break out. She's at 0%. Maybe it's sometimes she tips into the 1% area. And she goes around and she just keeps working at it. I don't know what this is all about. I can't get inside her mind. But I'm sure as people start to drop out, she'll be one of them.
Well, President Trump took to Twitter, criticizing this time New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and State Attorney General Tish James, both Democrats, for investigating the Trump Foundation. He said Cuomo was, quote, using his attorney general as a bludgeoning tool for his own purposes. In response, Cuomo told reporters in a conference call that the president's paranoia is, quote, once again getting the better of him.
Well, there's no question that the attorney general of the state has gone full out, full bore after Trump. And there's an awful lot of smoke indicating some real fire here. You know, I don't think Trump is the kind of guy who wastes his time unless he feels there's a real threat. And I think he thinks that there's a real threat there. We know that was true with the Trump Foundation. We know that was true at Trump University. And we know that's true with the kinds of properties he has. So the fact that the states have separate powers from the federal government has got to be something that is of real concern to him, especially since he's a New Yorker. And now we're talking about the New York Attorney General.
Well, from the Department of Politics, makes strange bedfellows, the name Simca Felder. Alan, they've welcomed him back into the Democratic fold.
What are you going to do? Here's this guy. He represents a certain demographic. He is a guy who has been nothing but harmful to the Democratic majority. They made him sit out in the cold for a while. But, you know, he's one of theirs. And you've got to make sure that you don't start punishing people to the point where they are permanently part of the other side. I believe that Felder has been nothing but terrible with the Democrats. But I keep trying to project myself into that situation and say, yeah, they're probably doing the right thing.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In the final hours of New York's legislative session, funding was secured to help combat Lyme and tick-borne diseases, but it's less than initially requested. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
The Senate approved a resolution that includes $250,000 for research into Lyme and tick-borne diseases, far less than the $1 million secured in the previous legislative session. Republican Sue Serino is chair of the Senate's Task Force on Lyme and Tick-Borne Diseases.
No, I don't think this is fair. And even $1 million, when you think about that $170 billion budget, like $1 million is a drop in the bucket. I don't understand. And that's for all of New York State. So all what I'm doing now is I'm just educating people. I'm talking to my new colleagues.
The $250,000 will be headed to four places. $100,000 is for the Millbrook-based Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, where money can help the Tick Project, a five-year study with Bard College that runs through 2021 that recruited households from two dozen neighborhoods throughout Dutchess County. Cornell Cooperative Extension receives $50,000 for its Don't Get Ticked New York program. Associate Dean of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Cornell University, Julie Suarez, says the funding will allow Cornell to continue surveillance for ticks in high-risk areas, like schools. Another $50,000 is for Columbia Medical Center's Lyme and Tick-Borne Disease Research Center, and $50,000 for Stony Brook University.
So it's a great places, but it's not enough money. So we'll have to keep fighting for it.
Serino of Dutchess County says it was difficult to convince new state legislators of the urgency for the funding, though Democratic State Senator Jen Metzger of Ulster County, acknowledges Serino, was on board and fought for the funding.
$250,000 is certainly going to be extremely helpful to organizations that are doing great work, and we need to continue to support that great work, both on the prevention side, as well as research into Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses and treatment and the like.
Metzger says it was a tough budget year and everything was a fight. Relatedly, Metzger introduced a bill directing the Department of Agriculture and Markets to conduct a public awareness campaign focused on the farming community, with an emphasis on helping farmers and farm workers take preventative measures, recognize symptoms, and determine available treatments. It awaits the governor's signature.
They spend a lot of time outdoors. There are a lot of mice on farms, you know, they're particularly vulnerable. And there hasn't been an education and outreach program really directed toward them.
Metzger says Ag and Markets has a budget to apply to such educational outreach. Serino says she hopes the outreach is not solely online, given rural broadband issues and access overall in the farming communities. Serino-sponsored legislation she hopes gets further next session. It relates to reporting Lyme and tick-borne disease infection after death to the Department of Health. It has bipartisan support with Democratic Senator David Carlucci.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
New York State Assemblyman D. Billy Jones represents one of the northernmost districts in New York State, the 115th. On the eastern border is Lake Champlain. As you travel west and south, it includes parts of the Adirondacks and the rolling agricultural lands north to the Canadian border. During a stop in Plattsburgh shortly after the legislature adjourned earlier this month, the Democrats said some good things were accomplished during the session for the North Country region. But Jones also tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley there were a lot of things he disagreed with.
As was mentioned by the governor and certain other people, it was certainly a progressive agenda that was pushed through. Coming from a more moderate district, I am more of a moderate Democrat. There were some issues that my constituents had serious concerns about, and I think my votes reflected that.
The Farm Worker Labor Protection Act, that's going to have a big impact, particularly on small farmers. Where did you stand on that, and what do you make of its passage?
I was opposed to that legislation. I spoke out very adamantly against it on the floor of the chamber. You know, farmers, for the most part, treat their farm workers good. They treat them like family on a lot of smaller family-operated farms and not so smaller family-operated farms. Are there bad actors in any profession? Sure. I just feel that this is another mandate put on our agricultural industry and our farmers at a time when they just cannot afford it. A farmer cannot set his prices or her prices. That is a major issue here. If they can't set their prices and we put more mandates on them, we're setting them up for failure. And this issue is very close and personal to me. I grew up on a farm. I understand why people want to treat workers fair. I do as well. All farmers do. Most farmers do. But this is just another mandate put on them that they cannot meet and be successful.
With this bill going into effect, it gives farm workers the right to organize. It gives them overtime, mandated days off. Mm-hmm. Do you see the potential for family farms shutting down due to this?
We see it right now. And you have to realize that a lot of these farm workers, especially the migrant workers that come over here, they want to work. They're here for a certain amount of time, and they're here to work to send money home to their families. And we actually had rallies down in Albany that these workers would come out and say, we want to work. We don't need this mandate.
You mentioned migrant workers. You also did not support the green light bill. Mm-hmm. And some people were saying that migrant workers and undocumented workers, they'd be able to get out there and work and be a part of the community much more easily with the green light bill. So that seems to kind of veer off from supporting
Sure.
some of the workers, particularly the farm workers.
Sure. And that's a great point. And I'm glad you did bring it up. I figured I would hear from our agriculture businesses and farmers here in the North Country on this, quite simply because of that reason. I heard from none of them. I heard from a lot of my constituents that were opposed to this bill. They were the majority of the people that I heard from. My county clerks came out against it. A lot of my county legislators here. A lot of regular constituents telling me on the street via emails, phone calls, that they did not want this. I listened to my constituency and I voted no on that.
D. Billy Jones, you hosted Carl Hastie on a visit to the North Country. He visited Bombardier. And one of the things that he talked about after he toured Bombardier was that being an example of the linkages between upstate and downstate. You're a Democrat from far northern New York.
The north is north, most you can get, yes.
What have you seen? Are you seeing a split or non-comprehension of upstate versus downstate?
You know, I think that's always been there. But I think as a representative from the North Country and my colleagues that represent the North Country here, we're always pushing for the upstate agenda. But I think our economy, to a certain extent, does depend on what goes on in New York City. And the MTA and the transportation manufacturing cluster we have here is a direct linkage.
So Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, you're in your assembly district now for the next few months. Are you planning priorities looking forward to January at this point?
Well, we recap. You know, the local bills that we weren't successful in getting through. Naturally, I have my local issues that I want to see prioritized, and we'll revisit that. What I like about, the summer months and the off-session season, if you want to call it that, I start my district tour, and I go around and visit each town, hear from my constituents, hear from the local governments and what their concerns are and what they need and what they see as priorities. I think that's the best way to do things. I think the best way you can properly represent your constituency is going out and seeing what's important to them. Then when I get back to Albany in January, I fight like hell to get those prioritized and to help the North Country out.
Democrat D. Billy Jones is serving his second term in the state assembly.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Tim Creamer, executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, is retiring in December after over two decades in that post. In the first of my three-part interview with Tim, he begins by talking about what it was like when he first arrived in New York from Ohio.
Well, I don't know much about Ohio anymore, but I could tell you the transition quickly caught me by surprise. The pace at which things happen here in New York, much faster than what I... And I would say kind of the controversies were more aggressive. There was a lot more debate. There was a lot more animosity, adversity. People had chosen their sides and were willing to fight it out. And Midwestern guy that I was, this was all kind of new. And it took me a couple years to adjust. But what I figured out is that the culture is going to stay the same. I'm the one who's got to change. And I think I've adjusted pretty well.
So you had to get maybe a little more aggressive in your strategy.
I did. And actually, it has worked to my advantage.
Well, we just had what will be your last tussle through a legislative session. And I know you've been through many years where there was never anything called an on-time budget to where we are currently. And certainly in this legislative year, with all Democratic leadership in both houses and the governor, lots of landmark legislation moved through. The issue for you, of course, as the leader of the school boards, are what issues in the session affect you directly. I was interested to learn a little bit more about, and of course we know about this, but the ban on religious exemptions on vaccines. And that does directly impact your group.
Absolutely. And we really had to decide to what extent could we take a position that would call for the end of a religious exemption to the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. And we thought hard about it, and we realized we're going to have put children in danger. There are children who have a medical exemption that cannot get vaccinated for whatever reason, some sort of autoimmune problem, they may already be sick, whatever. Now you bring children in who have been exempted because of a religious exemption. Those kids could be very well, those children who are on a medical exemption could be in danger. And the more we talked about it, we said, you know what, this religious exemption thing, we honor people to practice whatever religion they want, but this is something where vaccinations work. We didn't have a measles problem until now. We took a position, very strong position. I'm very happy that the legislature decided that this religious exemption had to go away.
And this religious exemption applied to many of the Orthodox communities in New York, Rockland County. But the other part of this is a misinformation, at least what most of us in the legitimate medical side of things think, of what is called the anti-vaxxers, and that they're out there spreading information that says that immunizations are bad for people.
We heard them loud and clear. They made sure that their voice was known to us, but when it all came down, we sided with the people who felt that this exemption had to go away, and it was the right thing to do. It will help children stay healthy, and it will save lives.
And as the folks who look over education, you're responsible for the health and safety of those students.
That's a huge matter. You know, when I talk to boards of education about their responsibilities, obviously the education program is premier, but the health and safety of students, the quality of the staff, the way in which we allocate resources and the way we communicate with our community are all key responsibilities of a Board of Education that's doing the job well.
One of the other pieces of legislation were these stop-arm cameras on buses, and this is really going to help.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine passing a bus when the you know, there's an arm down, especially, certainly with the flashing lights. Well, now you got this arm down with a camera on it. So if I went around that bus, hopefully it's going to record the fact that I did. It'll know my license plate, the description of my car, and I will be prosecuted for having done so. You do enough of those, and my hope would be that people would think twice about passing that bus.
Talk to us about a little bit more of a sort of a dense issue when it comes to the small school district and those legislative pieces that have kind of, as you've described, brought them more in line with the rest of the districts in the state.
Realize that New York is an old state and laws and regulations get piled on year after year after year, and sometimes they become obsolete or inconsistent. And what you have with these small city school districts that used to be funded in a certain way, who are now treated more like the rest of the central school districts around the state, they need to come in line. So there are things that they were required to do that limited their capabilities in a variety of different ways, and we're slowly but surely kind of bringing them in line with all of the other central school districts around the state, ones that are very similar to them, just a slightly different population or slightly different size. But the fact of the matter is these modifications to the regulations that oversee small city school districts are being adjusted so that they're better for those school districts.
Here's a hard issue to talk about, but may, as many say, solve some of this problem, consolidation.
Yeah, well, it could happen, and we've had one merger this last year up in Elizabethtown and Westport, and as time goes on, you see these enrollments drop, and you see the ability to for a school district to provide a high-quality educational program and meeting standards. It's going to be more difficult. I mean, I'm talking to some of these school districts that have 300 kids, K-12. You can't field a team. You can't have a lot of electives, very little in the form of AP classes, if any, foreign language classes, if any, hiring staff. It becomes more and more problematic. What you get into are the geographical problems, the transportation problems, some of the administrative problems, and quite honestly, the politics and the traditions.
Identity.
Oh, you know, we're the Golden Bears, and by golly, we're never going to be one of those guys across the way. So that's the way it happens around here, and you're seeing it's going to be forced upon people as time goes on because they cannot maintain the programs as they've had them for years.
That's Tim Creamer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. He's retiring in December after over two decades in the post. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1927 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.